Good morning. The house will come to order. Please stand if you're able, including folks in the gallery. If you could rise, please. Our flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Cameron.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may be seated. Our opening ceremonies this morning will be presented by Judith Barrington from Portland, who is reading a poem for us. She is a guest of Representative Bailey. Welcome.
Good morning. Last year, I was fortunate and grateful to be invited to the Mark Hatfield Marine Science Center as their poet in residence for a while, and learned a lot about the oceans there. So I thought I would offer you this morning a chance to listen to two short poems about the ocean that came from that experience and to be inspired by our great oceans. This poem is called The Book of the Ocean. They've all written their books, the wind with its scattering of seeds, its steady erosion of terraced hills, histories carved in the gray faces of cliffs whose grief it transcribes into song, and rain with its poetry, quick rivulets or pucks that rattle on the roofs of our minds, and sunshine with its golden tales, honey in the mouths of heroes, warriors who blaze and die young. The book of the ocean is the greatest and most neglected. It floats in shadows under rock shelves. It laps at the edges of dreams, a reminder of the deep dark into which we dive nightly, a reminder of the moon that hauls us and hurls us on the brink of wrinkled lands where once we staggered ashore, trying to become human. It is written on wavy scrolls at the tideline. It is written as a crab on a dry desert rock. It is written in green and indigo, sometimes awash. It is written to be studied from space or through the mask of a diver's face. Its comedy splashes our feet. Its tragedy writhes in the night. Like it or not, we are turning the watermarked pages, their words hissing in our ears with blood and with salt, while the moon grows fat, then wanes to the sweetest sickle. And another thing that I learned at Hatfield Center was about mapping the ocean bed, which is going on, of course, and needs to keep going on since we know so little about it. I was very interested in how these features that are discovered on the ocean bed are given names, and the names in this little poem are all real places under the ocean in the Pacific. It's called The Musician's Seamounts. From Strauss in the north to Mendelssohn in the south, they compose their 200-mile chromatic scale across the fracture zone, half steps rising towards green light, then plunging 4 miles down to the abyssal plain. The climber who wants to try Mount Mozart, slightly taller than Fuji, though nowhere near as pretty, must leave the high sea, begin her long descent past creatures that stare with bulging eyes and flick their fins as they sidle into the dark. When her feet land on the summit, she wants to sing, so humming a well-loved aria from Figaro, she sets out con brio to climb to the mountain's base. Somewhere off to her left, the Bach Ridge joins in counterpoint, while elsewhere Mount Beethoven frowns. Silent now, she's listening hard for the song of the earth's crust, that oscillation recorded by seismograms vibrating on one single note, the world itself humming cantabile through its ancient, cracked, tectonic throat.
Thank you very much for honoring us with your presence today. courtesies. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we are lucky today to have Judith Barrington as our guest in honor of National Poetry Month, and I'd ask you to extend courtesies to her. It was a special treat for me as well to hear the poem The Book of the Ocean, as my father once wrote The Ocean Book, although it was not quite so eloquent. Judith Barrington was born in Brighton, England in 1944 and moved to the United States in 1976. She has lived and worked as a poet in Oregon for 30 years. Judith has published 3 collections of poems, most recently Horses and the Human Soul, which was included this year in the Oregon State Library's chosen 150 books for the Oregon Sesquicentennial. Her awards include the Andre Berger Award for Creative Nonfiction, the Dulwich Festival International Poetry Contest, and the Stuart H. Holbrook Award for Outstanding Contributions to Oregon's Literary Life. Ms. Barrington spent more than 12 years working in Oregon's Arts and Education Program as a poet in residence in schools from Joseph to Hermiston to Toledo and Medford. Now she is much sought after as a teacher at conferences and workshops and is on the faculty of the MFA program at the University of Alaska in Anchorage. She recently returned from an arts center near Alicante, Spain, where she teaches every spring. Here in Oregon, she serves as president of the board of Soapstone, a nonprofit organization offering residencies to women writers at a beautiful retreat in the Coast Range. Colleagues, please help me in welcoming Judith Barrington, poet extraordinaire.
Again, welcome. Great to have you here. Also want to extend courtesies of the House to a group in the rear gallery. They can wave their hands. Folks from Willamette View Retirement Community, all the folks in the rear gallery are here in my district, stolen from Representative Tomei's district previously in redistricting, but great to have you all here. Very active, engaged group from Willamette View. I also have a page here today from Clackamas County. Zane, if you want to stand, Zane Robinette, who's 14 and 8th grader at Alder Creek Middle School in the North Clackamas School District. Very active in orchestra, honor roll, plays a bagpipe, and recently competed in the state geography bee. Aspires to be a history teacher and diplomat. Welcome, Zane. Further courtesies, Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I have 3 honorary pages today. A trio of 7th graders from Reynolds Middle School. First up is Maria Perez. If you could stand, please. Maria's activities and interests are soccer and basketball, and her career goals are to finish college, be a citizen leader, and make her family proud. Thank you, Maria. Next up is Sergio Lopez. His interests are soccer and AVID, which I don't know what that is, but I'm sure he'll tell me. His career goals are to become a professional soccer player or architect. Maybe he'll play for the new MLS team. And lastly is Gisela Urzua, and her career goals are to attend college and have a licensed daycare business, a very important profession. Thank you. Enjoy your day at the Capitol.
For the courtesies, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. John F. Kennedy High School in Mount Angel, Oregon, has sent us 3 of their best this morning. I'd like them to stand, if they would, on the side aisle. We have with us 2 valedictorians and the salutatorian from that this year's class. And you know, Mr. Speaker, I know this has been true of you, and it doesn't matter that you're not listening, that when we look back to our high school careers, I remember my parents' breasts swelling with pride when they would invite the valedictorians over to our house to tutor me. I want to introduce these 3 young ladies. First, Stephanie Jones. Stephanie plans to go to Chemeketa this summer, so she'll have a head start when she goes to Boise State this fall. She's interested in accounting, a minor in criminal justice, and after college, she hopes to apply to the Drug Enforcement Administration. So, welcome, Stephanie. Next, Courtney Kidd. Courtney's parents are Dean and Kelly Kidd, and throughout high school, she had a 4-point, which makes her eligible for a free ride at Chemeketa, which she's going to take advantage of right here in Salem. And she'd like to obtain a position in the forensic science field. So welcome to Courtney. Now, I didn't mention Stephanie's parents, and I don't want them to be upset. Raymond and Shannon Fry, are Stephanie's parents. Now, we'll go move on to Rachel Maurer. Representative Maurer will want to take note that Rachel's parents are Patty and Randy Maurer, and Rachel's interested in health care, especially primary care. She's going to go to Chemeketa with the possibility of going to Western Oregon. So mostly sticking around here in Oregon. Please welcome them. Give them the courtesies of the House. Thank you very much.
Welcome. Great to have you all here. Congratulations on your achievements. Further courtesies, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, have with me today my newest intern, Scott Klein. Stand up, Scott. Scott will be entering his junior year at Willamette University, majoring in politics with a concentration in international politics. He will be studying abroad in South Africa next semester, studying South African history and politics. Colleagues, if you see him in the halls, please give him a warm welcome. Thank you.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Representative Kump.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, good representative from the Christmas Tree, Oregon's Christmas Tree District. Representative Gilliam did so notably introduce my niece, and it is a joy to see her. She is graduating from Kennedy High School, and I'm pretty doggone proud of my brothers. Well, most of you know I have 13 brothers and sisters, and Rachel is the niece of my brother Randy and his wife Patty, and they are a delight. So thank you for welcoming them today.
Welcome. Let's return to our moment in Oregon's sesquicentennial history. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today's History Minute is adapted from an entry in the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Jim Shepke, the State Librarian of Oregon. The State Library was established by the legislature in 1905 as the Oregon Library Commission. The bill that created the library was drafted by Mary Frances Isom, the first director of the Multnomah County Library. Isom served as a member of the first commission and recruited the first state librarian, Cornelia Marvin Pierce, to come to Oregon from the Wisconsin Free Library Commission. The state library shared quarters with the Oregon Supreme Court until 1939, when the present state library building was constructed as the first building on what is today the Capitol Mall. Since 1905, the Oregon State Library in Salem has worked to develop library services for all Oregonians. It serves as the library for state government, maintaining a comprehensive collection of state publications dating back to the 19th century, and it operates the Talking Book and Braille Services program. More than those responsibilities, the State Library works with local public libraries, academic libraries, school libraries, and special libraries in nearly every Oregon community, providing grants and other forms of assistance to improve library services and to foster cooperation and sharing of library resources. Thank you.
Thank you. We also want to extend special congratulations to Grandpa Jeff Barker. Jeff's daughter, Heidi, who you may recall was the House Judiciary Committee counsel a couple sessions ago, gave birth to his grandson, Owen Gregory Moad, yesterday morning. Congratulations, Grandpa Jeff. Further courtesies. Clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying the presence of a quorum. Representative Reed is present. Representative Beyer is present. All members are present. Message from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed House Bills 3051, 3123, 3384, 2313, 2333, 2510, 2535, 2687. Passed the following House bills as amended by the Senate. House Bill 2095, 2331, 2641. Concurred in House amendments and repassed Senate Bill 159. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you to sign Senate Bill 65, 81, 167, 185, 186, 251, 367, 389, 464, 625, 639, 5513, 5514, 5528, and SCR 1.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
HJM 23, urging United States Senate to pass binding legislation ratifying United Nations Convention on Rights of Child.
Measure read for the first time. It's passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and SJR 8 be made a special order of business immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the resolution.
SJR 8, designating airstrip at Aurora State Airport as West Lamata Field at Aurora State Airport.
Question now arises upon final reading and adoption of SJR 8. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it's my honor to stand here today to bring this motion to you for West Lamata. West Lamata has done a lot of great things for this state, and request to use a visual aid, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Widener requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules to use a visual aid. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Proceed.
Colleagues, when we sat in committee, one of the things that every one of us received in committee was a book which talks of all the things that Columbia Helicopters has done for the state and as a company. And there's a lot of great history in this book. And I will have it in my office for anybody who wants to come up and look. But I want to share with you one of the opening statements that is in this book. And this is a letter, because the book was designed for the employees of Columbia Helicopters, and this is a letter from Wes to his employees. There is simply no way that Nancy and I can appropriately thank you, Columbia employees, for past and present, for your 50 years of devotion and service to our company. From the moment we became Columbia Helicopters in April of 1957, your commitment to our dream has not wavered. For this reason, among countless reasons, we are deeply indebted to all of you. All companies endure occasional hardships, and Columbia has been no exception. But your willingness to stand with us, to redouble your efforts when others might have faltered, to do whatever was necessary to keep us going, is one of the warmest and most enduring memories. Very simply, we would not be here today without you. For all you have been, friends, colleagues, advisors, visionaries, advocates, faithful employees, and global ambassadors of goodwill. It is written proof of your boundless energy, personal sacrifice, creative genuineness, and can-do spirit. Nancy and I feel privileged and blessed to have had the opportunity to share the best years of our lives with you. Thank you again from the bottom of my heart. All the best in the next 50 years, Wes Lamata. Mr. Lamata, this is how the state of Oregon feels about you, with the stuff that you've brought forward to the state and shared with everybody here. And it is our honor to have you here on this floor and recognizing you today. These few paragraphs that you wrote to thank your employees seem to draw a similarity for the way Oregonians can thank you for everything you have accomplished. Being a young entrepreneur early in life shows a work ethic that all Oregonians can model. From the beginning of Columbia Helicopters on April 24, 1957, your perseverance and vision to achieve success was visible. The company, once flying local thrill seekers out of the backyard of your Portland home for a few dollars, has now become a company that has a worldwide fleet of 30 aircraft and approximately 800 employees. Your service to our country and the U.S. Army is only one of the many great things you have done for Oregon. A display of your heroics on September 10, 1957, to save 15 sailors from the decks of the U.S. Army dredge that sunk near Coos Bay will forever be remembered. House Joint Memorial 8 is just one of the ways we can honor your great accomplishments and service to the state of Oregon. I feel honored to represent this memorial to our legislature and on your behalf. A few facts about Mr. LaMotta. He was born in Ellendale, North Dakota on April 29, 1926. The helicopter rescue I mentioned that he made of 15 crewmen from the decks of the William T. Rosal, a U.S. Army dredge that sank near Coos Bay on September 10, 1957. You can imagine the equipment that he had to use at that time. One single man flying in and out rescuing sailors off of this ship. It was a heroic feat that was done at that time. He was drafted into the U.S. Army October of 1944, and he served with Company E of the 152nd Infantry Regiment of the 38th Infantry Division in the Battle of Luzon in the Philippines. He was awarded the Philippine Libertarian Medal with Bronze Service Star and the Bronze Service Star, Asiatic Pacific Theater Service Medal, and the Victory Medal for his service. Wes has three children and his wife Nancy, Bart, Betsy, and Marcy. And here with him today are Bart and Marcy and his wife Nancy. On April 24, 1957, Wes and his brother Ed incorporated Columbia Helicopters and began their journey. The company started with Wes flying local thrill seekers out of the backyard of his Portland home at 102nd and Southeast Stark for a few dollars. Today, the company has a worldwide fleet of 30 aircraft and approximately 800 employees. Colleagues, join me in honoring this great man and a great Oregonian, Wes LaMotta, in voting for this bill today. I urge your aye support. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Weiner, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Witt, how do you vote? Representative Witt? Off the floor, Representative Galizio. How do you vote? Representative Galizio. Off the floor. Congratulations, Mr. LaMotta and family. SJR 8, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Congratulations. We appreciate you being here today. Thank you for, Mr. LaMotta, thank you for all your service to Oregon, and thanks to your family for all their support of you and the company. Great to have you all here today. Congratulations. Further propositions and motions? Representative Nolan.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass House Bill 2749.
Representative Nolan moves that the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass House Bill 2749. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we think there is a modest amendment that can be added to this bill that will garner the support that it needs to move forward. So the purpose of my motion is to allow a second motion to refer this bill to the Committee on Rules where it can be fixed and then come back.
It might be noted, colleagues, since this is the first one of these motions we've dealt with for this session, anyone who is on the prevailing side of the motion, in this case, the motion failed, so Representative Nolan voted on the no side, has the opportunity on the next session day, which this is, to bring such a motion as this. As long as they have gave notice on that day during the debate, which Representative Nolan did. Open to discussion on the motion. Is there discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nolan, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the House should reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass House Bill 2749 will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes no. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Now, in compliance with Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure, Section 468, Subsection 3, the question immediately recurs on final consideration of House Bill 2749. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that House Bill 2749 be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Nolan moves that House Bill 2749 be referred to the Committee on Rules. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I mentioned, there is a modest amendment to encourage the agency to improve its outreach to young women that we would intend to put in the bill in the Rules Committee and bring it back.
Further discussion on the motion. Seeing none, Representative Nolan, do you wish to close? She does not. Those of the opinion that House Bill 2749 should be referred to the Committee on Rules will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. House Bill 2749 is referred to the Committee on Rules. Further propositions and motions. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2210 and repass the bill.
Representative Clem moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2210 and repass the bill. To your motion.
The Senate narrowed the parameters a little bit around the public membership, making it clear that people who work in farmers markets and processors can occupy the public spots, and then the other seven spots on the Board of Ag still remains for producers who are actively engaged in farming. Doesn't take anybody out who could occupy the public members currently, but allows farmers market and food processors in, and the Senate narrowed that a little bit. Department of Ag still supports the bill, as do I. I would encourage your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Clem, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2210 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes no. House Bill 2210, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Further propositions and motions. First reading of House Bills. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 2682, relating to commercial security release and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3013, relating to ocean resources and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the second time or passed the third reading calendar. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 2001, which is the transportation package, that House Bill 2001 be read for a second time immediately. This is, just to give you the background on this motion, this is so this bill will be up for third reading tomorrow, which requires moving it up for second reading today. Is there objection to reading House Bill 2001 for the second time immediately? Hearing none, so ordered.
House Bill 2001, relating to transportation and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority, appropriating money and prescribing an effective date.
Bill read for the second time. It's passed to the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 154, relating to Senior Prescription Drug Assistance Program. Repeal Senior Prescription Drug Assistance Program.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 154. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Bentz, how do you vote? Bentz votes aye. Senate Bill 154, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 371, relating to trust, revises Oregon Uniform Trust Code.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 371. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. Senate Bill 371, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill in a short summary.
Senate Bill 660, relating to the Oregon State Capital Foundation, appropriating money and declaring an emergency, authorizes state employee to voluntarily request payroll deduction from employee salary or wages for purposes of making donation to the Oregon State Capital Foundation.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 660A. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Senate Bill 660A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House Bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 3487, relating to child care facilities.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3487A. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, This bill comes to you from your Rules Committee. It fixes a little glitch that we discovered while we were discussing in another committee child care in the form of after-school care and getting those providers registered with the state to protect our children. We found out that there are 380 unregistered preschools in this state that represents about 6,000 children. We think we need to know who the people are who are providing this kind of care for our children. And these are preschools that provide less than 4 hours a day. It was even stated that a registered pedophile could operate such a business as long as it was less than 4 hours a day. And that, frankly, was alarming to so many of us. So we have fixed it. We are charging them a small $20 registration fee. Then they will background check their employees, their volunteers, which is a cost of about $3 per person, and they'll do it through their local law enforcement or a couple of other opportunities they have to do these background checks, unless it raises up to a higher level of check, which costs more then, but I think that would mean that those are the people you don't want doing this business. So we think that that's a small price to pay to keep our children safe, and this is really a way that we can do that at very little cost and provide the assurance to our parents who take their children to these businesses that their children are in a safe situation. Please support the bill.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Boone, do you wish to close?
No.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cowan, how do you vote? Cowan votes aye. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Barnhart votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. House Bill 3487A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3489, relating to fish hatcheries and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3489. Representative Krieger, followed by Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3489 is a simple bill. It sort of directs Department of Fish and Wildlife to take a rather broad look at some of their hatchery practices and then report back to the legislature. One of the reasons for the bill was there was an article, March 28, 2009, where scientists called for reform of salmon hatcheries. Just a couple of words from that article. They talk about the narrowing of genetic variation. Studies have shown behavioral characteristics that have changed with our hatchery fish, outdated standards, reforming hatchery practices. Another statement would increase salmon runs more quickly than habitat restoration, and recommendations focus on ways to maintain, expand genetic diversity in our hatchery fish. Right now, we haven't built a new hatchery in Oregon since 1964, other than the research hatchery and also a couple of hatcheries that were built with commercial fish dollars when we still had the two commissions. 70% of our catchable fish today are coming out of hatcheries. We need to make sure that those fish are actually viable and not going to be in conflict with our native fish. Dr. Noakes last week talked to the Coastal Caucus about the differences in those fish between hatchery and wild, and we need to take some of that research and apply it at the hatchery level. And I think the department will be ready to do that by the time some of those studies are done over there. part of the thing we need to look at is the effect of predators on our smolts that are leaving all of our coastal streams. The Nehalem study that was done in 2002 showed that 54% of the smolts, those were steelhead smolts, are taken by mergansers and cormorants. 47% of the coho smolts are taken by cormorants, which means that a lot of our hatchery practices, our wild fish conservation plans, are in reality based on a false premise as to the effect of predation. So you put all these things together, we need to get better information for the hatcheries, the management of those hatcheries, and we are working with the department regarding predation. We put an avian position, trying to get an avian position, Department of Fish and Wildlife's budget, and I think we're going to work with the department, and this bill will help do that. And by the time we come back in the next session, hopefully we'll know more about what we need to be doing with our hatcheries.
Representative Roblin, co-carrier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Very, very simple bill. We also made sure that it didn't cost anything. All they're doing is reviewing all the studies that they've been doing and coming up with a study that would show us how best to utilize the existing hatcheries that we have and what kinds of progress do we need to make and fixing those so that the fish coming out of those hatcheries will have a better chance of survival. The research hatchery that we have in LC has done some amazing work on fish and how to raise them. If you go to a lot of these hatcheries that you see now, they're out in the sunlight. They don't really have shade over them. There's a lot of other issues that the research hatchery is informing. We need to upgrade and update them, but the best way to start is by understanding what we have and what we need to improve. Great bill. I encourage your support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Krieger, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes aye. Representative Comp votes aye. Representative Schaffler votes aye. Representative Barton votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Representative Gelser votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. I'm sorry, Representative Jensen was off the floor. House Bill 3489, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials, and resolutions. The clerk will read the resolution.
SJR 34, commemorating Legislative Fiscal Office for 50 years of service.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of SJR 34. This will be carried by Representative Hanna and Representative Comp. All the way from Douglas County, Representative and House Republican Leader Bruce Hanna. Representative Hanna.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Greatly appreciate the opportunity to saunter over here and get this done. Colleagues, good morning. This morning I was going to ask you to reflect a moment about what life would be like around this body or around this Capitol if there were no legislative fiscal office. But giving that a little thought, the notion is simply unfathomable. Every day we rely on the fiscal impact statements, research, spreadsheets, analysis, and reports compiled by the dedicated staff in H-178. We toss out convoluted questions mirrored in details, and we toss out questions to which no one in their right mind should really want or need the answer to. And every time, legislative fiscal nods, smiles, and graciously accepts our requests. working under perpetual deadlines and trying to balance all of the varied requests they've received cannot be easy, but they do it well and with the utmost in professionalism. While we're here in the building, it's easy to get lost in the day-to-day activity and the urgency of the given day's policy. And amid all the hustle and bustle, it's even easier to forget to extend a simple thank you to the people surrounding us who make the process and our work successful. Today, we are able to do that and pause and focus for a brief moment on extending that thank you to Legislative Fiscal Office for their work and dedication both during this 75th Legislative Assembly and for the rest of their 50-year history. Colleagues, I urge your aye vote on this resolution, but please don't just push the green button and call it a day. Take a moment and extend your thanks in person. Just don't take too much of their time. They're very busy. Colleagues, I urge an aye vote.
Co-carrier, Representative Comp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution, every session on this floor, we honor many individuals. They are community leaders and members around our great state. Today, I rise to invite you to celebrate with some of our own that are in this building. SJR 34 celebrates the Legislative Fiscal Office for 50 years of service. Today, the office operates with a staff of over 25 analysis and a support team. The office is led by our fiscal officer, Ken Rocco. He is one of seven people who have held this esteemed position in the past 50 years. This session, it has been my honor to be charged with co-chairing the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education. I work closely with a number of these analysts every day. I literally would not be able to do my job without numerous analysts that guide our work. As many of you know, the LFO staff works long hours. In fact, I'm sure every one of them worked part of this past weekend in order to prepare for this week. They do meticulous work and support our legislative body in our most difficult tasks, all the while maintaining an unwavering standard of professionalism. They write some of our speeches, do research, staff our committees. On top of all this, they facilitate the creation of a balanced budget. They are not just fiscal analysts or committee staff. They are extraordinary public servants. They are dedicated to our staff. Please join me and Representative Hanna in celebrating LFO's 50 years of service by passing SJR 34.
Further discussion, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution. Colleagues, I strongly urge an aye vote on Senate Joint Resolution 34. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the resolution. Yeah, as a member of the full Ways and Means and Education Sub, I just wanted to say that the Legislative Fiscal Office, it always reminds me of a show I used to watch when I was a kid, Hawaii Five-O. Some of you might have watched it. McGarrett was the lead guy, and he would always call his cohorts into the office, and he would say, Dano, I want a name of everyone on the island who wears sunglasses. Chin, I would like everyone on the island who's ever rented a car. We do the same thing to the Legislative Fiscal Office. We basically tell them, we want all the data that you could possibly provide, and we need it yesterday. So I wanted to apologize for our behavior and apologize in advance for what we're about to do to you in the next 3 weeks, but also thank you for all of your great help.
Book 'em, Rocco. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hanna, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. SJR 34, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Clerk, will we read the next resolution?
HJR 13, proposing revision to revision of Oregon Constitution related to bonded indebtedness and requiring approval by a two-thirds majority.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage. Excuse me, final reading and adoption of HJR 13A. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, it is with great pleasure that I bring you HJR 13 today. This resolution should look familiar to many of you for two reasons. First of all, it has been very well vetted in this legislative session, having made stops first at the Education Committee, and then the Revenue Committee, and then the Rules Committee, all committees that I have the pleasure of sitting on. So I'm pleased to have it before you here again on the floor. For those of you returning from 2007, it should also look familiar to you because a similar version passed the House with 52 aye votes in 2007. HJR 13 consists of two components that will give school districts additional tools to keep pace with the demands placed on their facilities by rapid growth, natural disasters, enrollment growth, and it will also give the state a tool to help local school districts. These are the two basic things that it does. Number one, the resolution authors a new section, 11P of the Constitution. This will allow the state to offer general obligation bonds for K-12 capital construction. This is the same bonding authority that already exists at the state level for community colleges, the Oregon University System, and K-12 seismic upgrades. What's important to recognize is that this just gives the legislature the tool to choose to do it. It would be up to future legislatures to decide when, if, and how to use this new tool that we would be putting in their box. The second thing that it does is expands the definition of capital. Currently, the Constitution does not allow local districts to furnish newly built school district facilities with bond proceeds. This means a school district can raise millions of dollars to build a school, but they can't use a dollar of that bond money to put chairs or pencils in the building. That means that these schools are not always equipped to meet the needs of the kids. One story that we heard in committee was about a school district with a brand new facility that couldn't afford to equip their new gym with bleachers. In my local school district, we face the same challenges with equipping our science labs. Colleagues, HJR 13 is a good bill that deserves your support again so that we can provide the assistance that our local school districts need and deserve. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Maurer, how do you vote? Maurer votes no. Representative Greg Smith votes aye. Representative Esquivel votes aye. Representative Girard votes aye. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes no. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Richardson votes no. HJR 13A, having received the required two-thirds majority, is declared adopted. The clerk will read the next resolution.
SCR 5, in memoriam, Gene Landsman.
Question now rises upon final reading and adoption of SCR 5. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. SCR 5, colleagues, honors the life of Gene Landsman, who was born in Tyrol, Austria, and was a member of the Austrian B national ski team before moving to the United States. He fell in love with Mount Ashland, located in my district, and worked in various roles for the Mount Ashland Ski Resort from 1974 to 2003. The resort continued to honor him by designating March 28, 2009, as the second annual Gene Landsman Day. The festivities included a dual slalom race and a slopestyle freestyle competition. Glenn Menzie, a co-worker of 22 years and a friend, was quoted in the Medford Mail Tribune as saying that Gene was our ambassador. Gene was what Mount Ashland was all about in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s. If you count friends as wealth, Gene died a rich man. Please join me in honoring Gene Landsman for his contributions to Southern Oregon by supporting SCR 5. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Buckley, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should, that the resolution should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. SCR 5, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. We have already dealt with SJR 8, so we're on to bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 9 relating to mandatory health insurance coverage of treatment of inborn errors of metabolism and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 34 relating to taxation. Senate Bill 36 relating to tolling of interstate bridges. Senate Bill 144 relating to the State Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying. Senate Bill 166 relating to public facility planning and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 200 relating to homelessness. Senate Bill 205 relating to construction contractors. Senate Bill 220 relating to the administration of crime victim funds by the Department of Justice Crime Victim Service Division. Senate Bill 75 relating to medical assistance for inmates with serious mental illnesses who are released from public institutions and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 277 relating to access to a toilet facility. Senate Bill 287 relating to licenses of residential facilities. Senate Bill 327 relating to the practice of naturopathic medicine and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 401 relating to conditional release. Senate Bill 484 relating to supplemental instruction and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 582 relating to sex offender notification to care facilities. Senate Bill 590 relating to state interparliamentary executive council. Senate Bill 729 relating to podiatry. Senate Bill 875 relating to assistance animals and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the second time or passed the third reading calendar. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 469, relating to business activities conducted by minors.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 469. Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd first like to just thank all our colleagues for swiftly getting through the agenda today to finally get to this bill. And for all that important legislation leading up to this bill. Senate Bill 469 prohibits the requirement for minors under the age of 17 to obtain a business license or permit as long as they operate as a sole proprietor under their own name. The bill still requires minors to obtain a business license if they hire employees or engage in business activities that require a license, permit, or other authorization. I don't know about all you folks, but a lot of us went around hustling up work when we were kids, and that's a good thing. We need to do all we can to encourage the spirit of entrepreneurialism and investment in this state and get these kids on the right track there. Our colleague from Albany and I had a bill putting more flexibility for kids in the workforce from 16 ages and up. I think that, along with, as a good complement to this bill, which is a good bill, I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Shoffler, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Senate Bill 469, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 5550, relating to financial administration of the state treasurer and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5550A. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 5550A is the budget bill for the state treasurer's office. The state treasurer serves as the banker for all state agencies and manages the investment of the state's trust funds, invests the excess cash holdings of state agencies and participating local governments in the Oregon Short-Term Fund, and coordinates and approves bond sales. the State Treasurer's Office also administers the Oregon 529 College Savings Network Program. The State Treasurer's budget is financed entirely by other funds and receives no general fund appropriation. The approved budget totals approximately $35.6 million and supports 83 positions. The Ways and Means Committee approved additional expenditures in this budget to improve the agency's financial reporting functions and the investment of funds in the Oregon Savings Growth Plan. Additionally, the budget supports added investment services for the new Oregon 529 College Savings Network and one-time expenses to transfer that program to a new contract manager. These investments are supported to improve operations and protect investors in the Oregon 529 College Savings Network plans. The committee explored and identified over $650,000 of savings, reducing the costs without reducing services. The budget also directs the state treasurer to report on performance-based compensation plans for investment officers working in other state governments and in the private sector before approving any such merit pay bonus for the second year of the biennium. Approval of a requested state and local government debt tracking system is delayed. The agency may request approval of this project after submitting a business case for review. Your Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends passage of Senate Bill 5550A.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nathanson, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes no. Representative Van Orman votes no. Senate Bill 5550A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 72, relating to special education and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading, final passage of Senate Bill 72A. Representative Kamp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I bring to you today Senate Bill 72A from the House Education Committee. This bill is a technical cleanup to make sure Oregon statutes are in line with federal laws and regulations related to special ed. Currently, there are several places in the Oregon statutes that define school district for special education purposes. That terminology of district is an encompassment of school districts and education service districts. Education service districts are included in this definition. Under federal law, they should not be. Only school districts are responsible for providing special ed services. Also in the A. N. Gross version, it also updates state statute to reflect other IDEA terminology. Colleagues, in short, this is a good bill, a technical fix that will ensure Oregon complies with federal education regulations related to IDEA. I ask for your support. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, this is an important bill. It's important for us to pass it in order to receive our federal funds. I was a no on this vote, on this bill in committee for this reason. There was a change at the federal level in terms of an executive order, which gave parents the unilateral right to revoke consent for evaluation and for the provision of special education services. This is something that happened not with input from the special education community and could be harmful to students in the future. Colleagues, I urge you to support this bill, but to join me in being watchful for a hopeful change in this executive order at the federal level and for our to come back and rechange our law to conform to what it was before that executive order required us to change the law. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Comp, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Senate Bill 72A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 105, relating to penalties for environmental laws.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 105A. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 105 increases maximum administrative and criminal penalties for violation of pollution control laws from $10,000 a day to $25,000 a day. The current statutory maximum, the $10,000, was set in 1973. And in 1973, colleagues, gas cost 39 cents a gallon, and a new home cost, on average, $35,500. If these statutory maximum for our pollution control laws had kept pace with inflation, today they would be rising to close to $50,000, not the $25,000 that is proposed in this bill. I want to be clear that nothing in this bill changes the formula for determining the penalties, a formula that takes into account the severity of the offense, the economic benefit that the polluter derived, and other factors. The cap is reached rarely and only in the case of the most severe offenses. In fact, over the last 5 years, only 22 penalties were subject to the cap for offenses such as illegal disposals of hazardous waste, violations of asbestos requirements on work sites, failure to clean up oil spills, and so on. I was interested to learn that last year, DEQ administered only 200 penalties total, most of them well below the current statutory maximums, and they averaged $3,900. So the primary purpose of this bill is to increase this bill of increasing the cap is deterrence. No state has lower penalties for violations of the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, and other delegated federal programs. I urge you to send a strong message to egregious polluters that they will not receive hospitable treatment in Oregon. Please don't visit. Please don't stay. This bill received a majority on the Environment and Water Committee. We recommend an aye vote and welcome discussion.
Further discussion, Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, in my law practice, I had occasion to actually deal with this penalty provision, and it seems to me that the proper measure of a penalty is the number of times that the penalty is actually exceeded. As was pointed out in the explanation of the bill, this has happened 22 times in the past 5 years. And to me, we do not need to be granting authority to the Department of Environmental Quality for $25,000 per day penalties. We don't need to give that type of authority to a government agency. Our only control over the government's penalty is the lid that we put on it today. $10,000 a day is how the bill reads in most instances, in some cases per occurrence, but most of the time per day. About $3.5 million a year if someone was crazy enough to continue the penalty, the violation that long. To me, the DEQ has plenty of authority. We've passed many bills out of this chamber this session that give the DEQ even more authority. Many of the things that we've done would apply, or these penalties would apply to many of the things we've done. I would strongly urge that you consider the fact that $10,000 a day is enough. We don't need to give more authority to the DEQ than it already has. This is our only opportunity to control what the agency might otherwise do. I urge your no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Yeah, I appreciate our colleagues' concerns about the amount here, but it's only in the most heinous examples of non-compliance with the law that kind of penalty would be imposed. We've had an awful lot of pressure on the good, honest landowners in this state who comply with the law when it comes to environmental regulation. And I think we need to do everything we can to help them in their efforts to take advantage of the bountiful resources we have. And I think we can do that by going out there and putting the hammer down on people who are consciously, willfully irresponsible. That's why I think this is a good bill. I urge you to vote.
Further discussion, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to declare a potential conflict.
Say your conflict, please.
I am an owner and operator of an underground storage tank facility.
So noted for the record. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cannon, do you wish to close? Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Very briefly, the kinds of offenses we're talking to here, I think, really do speak to my colleague's point. We're talking about negligent or intentional spills of hazardous materials into state waters, negligent or intentional spills of oil, negligent or intentional failure to clean up spills of oil or other hazardous materials. These really are severe crimes. And the fact is, weaker enforcement and lower caps is unfair to the vast majority of Oregon businesses that spend the money to comply with environmental laws. There was an 80,000-gallon oil spill in the Umpqua River Basin in 2005. The violator was fined $6,000. We're still cleaning it up. Colleagues, I urge your aye vote on this to send a strong message to potential polluters of Oregon's water, air, and land.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Widener, how do you vote?
No.
Widener votes no. Senate Bill 105, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 120, relating to first aid cards and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 120. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 105 is a simple housekeeping measure that removes...
Senate Bill 120, Representative Gelser.
Senate Bill 120, I'm sorry.
It will change in just a moment. You may proceed. The screen will change in a moment.
Thank you. It was great to vote for Senate Bill 105. I hope you'll follow suit and vote in favor of Senate Bill 120. Senate Bill 120 is a simple housekeeping bill that removes the requirement of having a first aid card from the TSPC, from your teacher license. This is something that local school districts now take care of. This does not remove first aid cards from our school districts. It simply aligns law with current employment practice. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close?
No.
Then the House will stand at ease momentarily while our system reboots. Now, having had that time for additional contemplation, those who have the opinion that Senate Bill 120 should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. I think I missaid that. Those in favor of it passing will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
Aye.
Gilliam votes aye. Senate Bill 120, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 122, relating to alternative education and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 122A. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this bill comes to you from the Education Committee, and it clarifies how we treat special needs students with IEPs if they are choosing to go to an alternative school in a district of their own or an alternative school in a different district. It, one, says that the district in which they reside must, in both cases, give permission. Two, if in fact they are in a district not that they reside in, but in another district, that the state school support will be, the receiving district will be treated as if it was the home district for the purposes of sending that money. So the money will follow that special needs student. It also does something that I think really needs to be clarified, and that's give a distinct definition of what it means to be a teacher in an alternative program. Now, alternative programs have a separate portion of the ORSs that are devoted to them, not the same as charter schools, not the same as regular schools. And in that section, it now clarifies that a teacher holding any valid state-approved certificate can teach all levels in an alternative school. Now, that means a basic or an advanced, elementary, secondary, or middle, if they have those certificates. What it clarifies is that if they have a special certificate, i.e. a vocational district one, they cannot teach in an alternative school except in that specific thing that they have been identified for. But other general certificates can teach in an alternative school, all grade levels. And that's kind of what alternative schools have been doing for a long time. This clarifies that, makes it appropriate. I think it's a great bill. Encourage your I support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin does not wish to close. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Buckley, how do you vote?
Aye.
Buckley votes aye. Representative Kotek, how do you vote?
Aye.
Kotek votes aye. Senate Bill 122A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 127, relating to financial responsibility requirements for motor vehicles.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 127B. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you Senate Bill 127B. It amends and or repeals various statutes dealing with financial responsibility as they relate to the ownership and operation of motor vehicles. This bill removes provisions of law that are obsolete, archaic, and or impractical for DMV to administer. It also clarifies provisions that cause confusion for DMV, the public, law enforcement, and or insurance industry personnel. The proposed changes are intended to improve efficiencies, increase program effectiveness, and enhance customer service. And colleagues, I'm going to spare you a section-by-section description of what the bill does, but if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Beyer, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should have passed will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Stigler, how do you vote? Stigler votes aye. Representative Matthews votes aye. Representative Roblin votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. Senate Bill 127B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 128, related to documents issued by the Department of Transportation.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 128A. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, as the last bill, this is a simplification and clarification of some DMV things. Very simple, sort of almost reviser, but a little bit more, so it's here before you. It limits, it gives DMV the authority to limit the expiration period of limited-term driver's permits to no longer than the period of time for which the driver permit of the same type is issued. It also allows them to not mail a renewal reminder to persons who receive limited-term licenses that are less than a year. Sometimes they have had to send out a renewal license on a license that's already expired. That makes no sense. And third, it allows them to continue issuing fictitious driver's license and identification cards to law enforcement officers who carry out undercover duties. This helps all concerned. It clarifies from DMV what their responsibilities are here and allows the issuance of these fictitious driver's licenses when they're needed. Urge an aye vote. Thank you very much.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Berger, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes aye. Senate Bill 128A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 151, relating to administration of the states.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 151. Representative Stigler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring to you today Senate Bill 151 from your Judiciary Committee, where essentially, this bill codifies current practice by the Department of Human Services in those cases where there is a small estate, potential small estate probate, or where there a person dies who has been under state care and there is no personal representative. It essentially does two things. It clarifies that the Director of Department of Human Services has the ability to approve attorneys who are eligible to be appointed as personal representatives of estates, and it ensures that those attorneys are considered a qualified person for small estate probate purposes. It also clarifies that the attorney thus appointed does not represent the Department of Human Services when appointed. This was a practice that had been in existence for some time but was called into question by the Attorney General's office. Additionally, at the Judiciary Committee, there was a concern that was voiced by the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and essentially it had to do with their situations where they have a protected person under their care in a conservatorship program. And if DHS deems that it's not appropriate or worth it to file one of these small estate probates, then ODVA is left with the inability to close their conservatorship. So while this was pending in the Judiciary Committee, an interagency agreement was signed resolving that situation, and I think that pretty much takes care of it. Urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Stigler, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Stigler, how do you vote? Stigler votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. Senate Bill 151, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. I think in the interest of the hour, colleagues, we will roll the remaining bills forward. The chair requests unanimous consent that the remaining bills on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on Wednesday, May 27th, 2009's third reading calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and consideration of Senate Bill 34 and House Bill 2001, which are both transportation-related bills. Senate Bill 34 and House Bill 2001 be made special orders of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Wednesday, May 27, 2009's calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans will get their lunches and then caucus. Thank you.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. An invitation to House Democrats to join me in 5 minutes for a caucus. 5 minutes from now, please join me for caucus. Thank you.
Are there further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, as you know, the Republicans put out a back-to-basics budget, and that budget includes the use of $500 million in available ending fund balances. For those familiar with business lingo and financial statements, that is essentially Oregon's cash on hand. Many people have expressed doubt about this number, and I want to provide a great deal of clarity to it today. I will email this document to you, which looks like this. Simply said, this is the comprehensive annual financial report, fiscal year ended June 30th, 2008. On page 12 of that very document, which was released by the governor's office, you will find the following. On June 30th, 2008, the state's governmental funds reported combined ending fund balances of $4.9 billion. Of this amount, 71.5% is available for spending at the state's discretion, unreserved, undesignated fund balance. Again, of the $4.9 billion, 71.5% is available for spending at the state's discretion, unreserved, undesignated fund balance. 71.5% of $4.9 billion equates to just over $3.5 billion. $3.5 billion available, unreserved, undesignated, and that's according to DAS. That money is available for spending at the state's discretion, and is part of that unreserved, undesignated fund balance. Keep in mind, again, you will receive this document from me. It should put real clarity to the point. The $500 million we are using is only a small portion of the $3.5 billion available. Colleagues, I hope you will all keep this in mind as we consider massive tax increases or small tax increases that will soon be coming before this body. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House adjourn until Wednesday, May 27th at 10:15 a.m.
Representative Tomei moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Wednesday, May 27, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourns.